Our Please Explain segments are all about exploring aspects of our daily lives that most of us don't know a lot about. And I sense that today's subject is about as perfect for a Please Explain as we will ever have. It's touch, which is part of our lives every minute of our day, and although we hardly think about it, is essential to our survival. To help us understand and appreciate touch, we've invited Dr. David J. Linden to our show. He is a professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, author of Touch, the Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind, which is published by Viking. And we invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. You can call us at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org, or also join in on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Dr. Linden, what is touch's place in the five senses? Would it be harder to survive without touch than without sight or smell?
Well, I have to actually take exception with the premise. We have way more than five senses.
Okay.
So in addition to the classic ones, we have our sense of balance, and we have the senses of our internal state. So they're way more than five. But once we get beyond that, it turns out that there is a big difference when you look at early life and its effects. So you can be born blind and develop with a fine mind and body and have a full and wonderful life. And the same if you're born deaf. But if you are born with a sense of touch, but you are touch deprived as an infant and a toddler, and this we largely know from the treatment of the orphans in institutions in Romania in the 1980s and 90s, if that loving touch is lost early in life, then a whole disaster unfolds, and those kids develop self-soothing, compulsive rocking motions, and they have attachment disorders, cognitive problems, and not just neuropsychiatric problems. They also have problems with the development of their gastrointestinal system and their immune system. And the bad news is that if you don't get that loving touch during that crucial period in early life, these problems will persist into adulthood.
Isn't there something called touch blindness?
There is something called touch blindness. It's extraordinarily rare, but it does occur. And so touch we think of as being a single unified sense, but it's actually very many different nerve endings, each specialized to transduce a different kind of information. So there are nerve endings for heat and cold and pain and itch and vibration and texture and pressure and stretching and microscopic slip. And all of these feed into the brain. If you have this rare disease called primary sensory neuronopathy, then you lose the sensors for the aspect of mechanical touch and the fast pain messages, but you leave behind your caress sensors. These are specialized sensors in the hairy skin of humans that detect pleasant light interpersonal touch.
Now, do they all go to the same area of the brain, even though they're types of different kinds of sensors?
No, they don't, and I think the most important thing to realize is, in terms of the organization of touch in the brain, that they're two different systems. There's one system that is there we call the discriminative touch system, and this is all about the facts. Where in my body am I being touched? What is the quality of the touch? What is the intensity of the touch? Then there is a separate emotional touch system, and this is what makes a caress feel good. It's what makes an orgasm feel good, and it's what makes pain feel bad. And we think of pain as being intrinsically emotionally negative and caress as being intrinsically emotionally positive, but this is a trick our brain plays on us by having these emotional and discriminative touch centers in our brain active at the same time.
Now, some people, you could touch a person who you have a close relationship with, give them a caress, and something wonderful is going to happen. Somebody else touches that person in the same way, and they are repelled. So there's something else going on there as well.
Right. I think it points to the incredibly important effects of context. I like to illustrate this with my very favorite cartoon from a talented cartoonist who lives in Brooklyn named Julia Wirtz. And in this cartoon, there's a man driving and a woman with a grocery bag on her lap. And the man says, "Oh, P.U., what smells like a fart in here?" And the woman looks in the grocery bag and she says, "That's the expensive French cheese we just bought." And the man says, "Oh, well, in that case, what smells so delicious in here?" And, you know, it's funny, but it points out something crucial, which is our sensations aren't just dependent upon how the external world impinges on our sense organs. It is dependent upon context and upon what we expect. And touch is no different. Imagine that there's a caress on your arm from your sweetheart in a nice, loving, connected feeling time. And now imagine that same caress on your arm in the middle of an argument where things are unresolved. It's not just that it feels the same, but then we think about it differently. It actually feels different. Imagine an arm around your shoulder from a domineering boss versus your best buddy versus someone hitting on you in a bar. Every one of these things literally feels differently, and that is because the higher areas of the brain that compute context and social interaction are sending messages to the part of the brain that is about the facts of touch and modulating that perception based on that context.
But in both cases, something called C-tactile fibers are involved?
Well, C-tactile fibers are special caress sensors. They're only found in your hairy skin. So we're hairy on most of our bodies, even places like our inner thigh or our upper cheek that we think of as being hairless, have tiny little hairs if you look very carefully. The only places that are hairless are like our lips and our nipples and the soles of our feet and the palms of our hands and a couple of other little spots. But in hairy skin, there are nerve endings that wrap around the base of hair follicles, and they sense hair deflection. And these are C-tactile fibers, and they are the caress sensors. They are tuned for the speed and pressure and temperature of a caress that feels the most loving. And these fibers send their messages to a part of the brain called the posterior insula that is involved in emotional touch sensation.
I'm speaking with David J. Linden, a professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. His latest book, Touch, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind. It is published by Viking. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we invite your calls to our Please Explain segments. The number here is 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Last summer, Vice published an article about cuddle parties in Berlin, where strangers join together under clear rules and hold each other. Do our brains process touch from strangers and people we know differently?
Yeah, they do, and this is part of the social context. So this is true not only with humans, but also with pets. So there are lots of benefits, particularly for people who live alone and don't have a lot of touch interaction.
And they need to be cuddled?
To touching their pet. And it works better if a pet with which they have a bond. So cuddling a stranger is a great thing to do, but it doesn't feel exactly like cuddling someone with whom you have an emotional bond, and the brain activation that's produced is slightly different. But I don't want to dissuade people from cuddling strangers. It's a wonderful thing if everyone is happy about it.
If we were to map touch sensors in the body, are there places where they're more densely located than others? For example, the face, the lips, the mouth, the fingers, versus fewer in the chest or thighs or ankles?
Absolutely. So, I mean, think about where the parts of the body that we use to explore fine tactile form. So if you want to read Braille, for example, you can use your fingertips to do that because we have lots of Merkel endings. These are the kinds of nerve endings that are really good for textures and fine tactile form. Our lips are also good for that, and our tongue. And you can actually read Braille with your lips and tongue if you need to. You might think, well, there are other areas of the body that are really sensitive, like the cornea of the eye. Only a tiny deflection of the cornea is really obvious to us. Or the genitals are also very sensitive. But it turns out that they are sensitive, but they're not discriminative. They can detect very fine indentations of the skin, but you can't read Braille with them. If you try to read Braille with your eye, you will fail. If you try to read Braille with your genitals, you will fail. If your listeners don't believe me, they can go down to the ATM and wait till no one's around and do the experiment themselves. But I can tell you in advance it won't work.
Doesn't touch play an important role in how we respond to what we eat? We think of taste as being the main sense involved in eating, but aren't texture and the feel of food major factors as well?
Yeah, so our experience of eating is a very multisensory experience. So on our tongue, we only have the five basic tastes: sweet, sour, salt, bitter, and umami, which is this kind of proteinaceous taste. Like you get from meat broth or Parmesan cheese or soy sauce. And then, of course, smell is extraordinarily important. We have 300-ish different kinds of smell receptor in the human nose. Touch receptors are very important in two ways. One way is that obviously a lot of the things that we really enjoy about food have to do with the texture of the food, biting into a crisp apple, biting into a fresh French fry that resists on the outside and is soft on the inside, as opposed to a stale one that's been out for half an hour that's limp. So those are touch sensations from touch sensors that are in the oral cavity. But in addition, things that we think of as being tastes are actually being mediated by touch sensors. So, for example, when you eat a dish with chili peppers in it, the active ingredient capsaicin is actually activating touch sensors in your mouth. And part of the way you can know this is that you can rub chili peppers on your hand and feel the warming sensation of the capsaicin just as well as you can in your mouth. And the same thing is true with mint. Its active ingredient is menthol, and it activates cool receptors in your mouth that are also present. And the same thing is true with wasabi or horseradish. It activates pungency receptors called TRPA1 that are present all over your body, including in your mouth.
And then tingly mouthwashes. Or is that different?
Tingly mouthwashes have different things in them depending on what they are. Many of your listeners may be familiar with Chinese peppercorns, which aren't like chili peppers. They produce a more tingling, numbing sensation. And they actually work not on a receptor, but on a particular ion channel that's involved in the sending of electrical messages in neurons. And so they kind of work as a very, very mild anesthetic almost.
We have a lot of people calling in, so let's take a few of those calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Andrea, hi, yes. You're on the air.
Yes, I was telling your screener that I'm an early intervention practitioner, and we see a lot of children with sensory issues, and they are either sensory averse or sensory seeking.
Why do autistic people often feel very uncomfortable when they're touched?
It's not only a matter of touching. It's a matter of what they're looking to, what they either want to touch or what they want to get off of their hands. And in addition, it's whether or not they like to be cuddled or not. So those are sensory issues.
Dr. Linden?
Yes, I'm not quite sure if there's a question there, but I can comment.
It's more like a comment.
It's absolutely true that people on the autism spectrum are often averse to social touching, and this can manifest in different ways. Some people on that spectrum are fine with a big, strong bear hug, but a light caress will annoy them. Other people don't want any interpersonal touching at all. Now, quite honestly, it's a big mystery. So it's not as if you can look at the nerve endings in the skin in a biopsy from someone on the autistic spectrum and go, aha, this is different. You can see different patterns of activation in the brain from touch in touch-averse people with autism, but we don't really know how those different patterns of activity come to be, so it's not that informative. So right now, that particular aspect of touch aversion is a bit of a mystery. But there are a lot of neurotypical people that have very different reactions to touch. Not absolutely everyone likes a caress. And this can come from personal history, or it's possible there may be genetic variation that we don't yet understand.
For example, I was going to say, some people are more ticklish than others.
Some people, to switch to a different sense, I think many people, when they were in science class, were given a piece of paper to lick. And some people who lick it experience a highly bitter sensation, and to others don't taste anything at all. This is due to genetic variation in a bitter receptor in the tongue. It may be that there is genetic variation in some of the molecules involved in transducing touch sensations that give rise to some of these subtle differences in people's like or dislike of particular kinds of touch. There are more dramatic things that happen when people lose all touch sensation or lose all pain sensation.
My guest is David J. Linden, professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. His previous books, The Accidental Mind and The Compass of Pleasure, now Touch, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind. It's published by Viking. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. In that song, he feels love in his fingers and his toes. We're going to find out whether that's actually possible as we continue this conversation on Please Explain with David J. Linden, whose latest book is Touch, the Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind. It's published by Viking. That's not where I usually feel love. Is that possible?
Well, look, you go on the Internet. There's people into everything.
Well, I guess what one of the messages I'm getting from all of this is that everything is depends on context. So we talked earlier about a touch from a person we feel close to feeling welcome, while an unwanted touch might repulse us and even make us jump. So, and it's the same touch.
That's absolutely true. And maybe my answer to you about the Internet was a little bit flip, and I apologize. What is absolutely true is if you're looking, for example, for an explanation of sexual touch, people can have sexual experience from any kind of touch or even without touch at all, just by talking. And people can achieve orgasm from touch anywhere on their body. Nonetheless, there's something special about the genitals, particularly about the external clitoris in women and the glans, penis, the head of the penis in men. These areas are about real hot spots for sexual sensation.
They have a lot of nerve endings?
Well, so there are a lot of nerve endings in both places, and particularly a lot in the external clitoris. But what's just a lot of nerve endings, you've got a lot of nerve endings in your fingertips too, right? And you don't, most of us aren't having orgasms from stimulating our fingertips.
I'm trying it right now.
We can bring the listeners in and do a population experiment.
I still haven't gotten past the braille with my genitals, so. Where were we? I'm sorry.
Okay, I don't want to get off on a.
I got the point. That nerve endings.
There. So here's the thing. You would imagine that if you look under the microscope at the structure of the skin in the genitals, that you might see something special that would account for why they convey sexual sensation so strongly. And the answer is, well, there is one kind of special nerve ending that's there called a mucocutaneous end organ, or in German, Genitalnervenkörperchen. But we don't really know whether this nerve ending is responsible for sexual sensation, which is kind of astonishing when you think that sexual sensation is such an important motivator of our lives and is central to our laws and our religious ideas and so much we do, and yet we actually don't know which neurons are responsible for it. It's kind of a shame, actually.
Do women have different senses of touch than men?
Yeah, well, they do on average. And so if you take 1,000 women and you bring them in the lab and you put little tiny gratings on their fingertips to determine what are the finest spatial forms that they can determine, and you take 1,000 men and you do it, you find on the average the women are better than the men. And you might think, oh, why is that? Maybe the women have softer skin and it's more easily indented, and that allows them to distinguish these forms better. That turns out not to be the case. And then Dan Goldreich, a scientist in Canada, was looking at the data, and he said, hey, wait a minute. If you look at the women who just happen to have really big fingers, they're as bad as men on average. And if you look at the men who just happen to have really tiny fingers, they're as good as women. And what it turns out is that you have a fixed number of fine touch sensors on your finger pad, and if you got a bigger fingertip, they're more spread out, and there are bigger gaps in between them, and so your touch sense is slightly degraded. And so it correlates with male and female, but it actually has nothing directly to do with male and female.
Let's take some calls. Anne from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there, Leonard. I was curious how dissociation would impact the sense of touch. Dissociation is usually understood as, losing a sense of your body. So someone who's had a physical trauma, an incestuous parent or a too gropey parent, might dissociate in the face of touch. So I was just curious about if there's any difference in the brain patterns.
Well, so that is an absolutely terrific question that I unfortunately know nothing about. So I don't know what neurological changes in touch circuitry occurs when there is dissociation involved. What we do know more generically is that our individual life experience can subtly sculpt the touch centers in our brain. So, for example, if you play violin 3 hours a day, your fingering hand will its representation in the body map in the touch region of your brain that's involved in detecting sort of the facts of touch, that will expand a little bit. Or if you're a mother who's breastfeeding, the representation of your nipple will expand a little bit. And then when you're done breastfeeding, it will contract again. And if you quit violin, after a while it will contract again. So we do know that the brain is plastic as a consequence of experience. And that is a very general answer that really doesn't speak to the question directly, but is sort of in the neighborhood.
But thank you for calling anyway, Anne.
Thank you.
We go now to Jessica from Long Beach. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions, actually. The first of which is, do we lose our sense of touch as we age? Does it diminish?
The way that a hearing and our eyesight may.
Right. If I can answer that one first, because if you say the second one, I'll forget the first one. So the answer is yes, unfortunately. So starting at about age 20, we lose about 1% of our touch transducing nerve endings in our skin every year. And it's so slow that when we're young and when we're middle-aged, we don't notice it very much. But by the time we're old, we lose all the different touch modalities. And so pain is diminished. Heat and cold are diminished. Fine touch is diminished. And this is a problem. So, for example, elderly people in institutional settings often get horrible bed sores. And you wonder, well, why don't they just feel tremendous pain from this and report it at the very first onset before it gets bad? And the answer is because their pain-sensing nerve fibers are mostly gone. It's also a problem. It's also a contributor to devastating falls in the elderly. So there are a lot of reasons why the elderly have these falls, some of them having to do with balance sense, some of them have to do with muscle strength. But one aspect is that you just can't feel the ground underneath you very well through the touch sensors in the soles of your feet.
Very quickly, the second question.
The second
Because we usually only give people one question.
Okay. Well, the second question was, do our C receptors diminish because of waxing or laser hair removal?
That's a great question. We don't actually know the answer to that. So you would imagine that if you deprive rats of use of an arm by putting it in a tiny little cast, that the representation of touch sensors in the arm diminishes. So my guess would be that those touch sensors that are normally activated by hair deflection, if they are deprived of activation by hair deflection because you've removed the hair, that would cause some subtle reorganization in the brain. But to my knowledge, that study has not yet been published.
You've written about how sensations of touch can influence our experience of events. For example, doesn't holding a hot drink tend to make us feel more warmly toward people that we're meeting?
It does. It's rather remarkable. These are some studies that were done at Yale by John Bark's group. And what he found was that even incidental touch experiences can profoundly affect our evaluation when we're forming rapid impressions of people. So in one experiment, he had people hold either a hot or a cold drink, and then they were given a resume to evaluate, and they were asked to evaluate that resume in terms of a bunch of different properties. And if you held a hot drink right beforehand, well, basically, you evaluated that person as warmer, that is to say, more interactive, more cooperative, more trustworthy. If you have people have a resume and it's on a light clipboard versus a heavy clipboard, people whose resumes were on the heavy clipboard were literally weighted as having more gravitas, meaning they were more serious about the job. And what's interesting is that things like the warm cup didn't give a positive glow to everything. So those people weren't rated as being smarter or more competent. They were just rated as literally being warmer.
Deborah, hi, you're on the air. Deborah from Hastings, yes.
Oh, hey, hi. Thank you. Yes, I'm always really intrigued by, I guess it's sense memory that's connected with things that people have taught me. For example, my mother taught me to roll a lemon on the counter before cutting it to get more juice. I will always think of certain people when I do certain things that they taught me. And I'm wondering if it works the other way around. In other words, if I might remember somebody through something, through a touch experience, let's say.
Oh, absolutely. Sense? Yeah. So if there is a unique touch experience that you have associated with a person or event, it can bring it back in much the same way that an odor can in a Proustian sense or a snatch of music can. So touches, if they are sufficiently unique to refer to a particular event or place or person, can indeed be triggers for memory.
A listener on Twitter asks, do cultures that eat with their fingers have advantage over ours?
Well, I don't know quite what advantage they mean. Advantage, I'm not sure. You know, I would
well,
ask
the,
advantage
I guess,
what
I guess
if I
it
have
dis-
this person live. But
My guess is he or she, I don't know, is asking, well, a fork is something that is not personal, but by taking the food in our fingers and putting it to our mouth, we're doubling the experience.
Well, but it's just a different experience. So it turns out that when you have a fork and you are using it to impale a piece of food, you actually, it becomes an extension of your body. You can detect touch experience to some degree at the end of that fork. In other words, imagine that you're poking a tomato, and it's kind of a mushy, rotten tomato versus a nice, fresh tomato that resists the entry of the tines initially. The reason that you can detect sensations at the end of tools like a fork or your steering wheel of your car or a surgeon's scalpel or a violinist's bow is because of specific nerve ending called the pacinium that is sensitive to high-frequency vibrations in your fingers and palms.
I understand that we are not all that far away from touch screens that will touch us back.
That's absolutely true. There are already technologies to do what's called haptic display. That is to say, to have a little pad that can display textures. And one way to do this is to have tiny little microscopic plungers that deform a membrane. And so you might imagine that, you know, 10 years from now when you're using your iPhone number God knows what, or your Samsung Galaxy S God knows what, that you will have a region where, you know, let's say you're on Amazon, you want to buy a buttery leather wallet and you want to feel it, you click something, it'll say, all right, we'll display the texture for you right here.
David Linden is a professor of neuroscience at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, New York Times bestselling author of The Compass of Pleasure and The Accidental Mind. His latest book, Touch, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind, published by Viking. Thank you so much for being on today's Please Explain.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.